are listening to Into the Comics Cave with your host, comic book heartthrob, Grant Stoy.
Hello, fellow humans. I'm so sorry. I'm still bad at these. But we're coming in hot because today we have a comic writer that I'm very excited to talk to. She's done stuff for, 2000 AD, Ahoy, Scout. And you've got a bevy of other stuff available to read. We have Honor Vincent with us today. Hello, Honor. How are you?
Hi. I'm pretty good.
And I know this isn't a visual medium, and I apologize for that. But the cat pictures behind her are just beautiful.
I didn't show you my shirt either.
No.
Nobody's going to be able to see this, but it's a cat in a spacesuit. Very serious astronaut portrait of a cat.
I wish I would have known. I have a shirt with grumpy cat looking into the moon and another grumpy cat looking down.
Oh, there you go.
But you are a proud cat mom, correct?
Very proud. Very proud. I have three beautiful children. they're great. Love them dearly.
What are their names?
So we have Cheese, who is a big orange boy, Peanut, who is a large brown cat, and then Wren, like the bird, who screams all the time.
Like the bird?
Like the bird, yeah, kind of.
Part of me was hoping for three food names because that would
I know. It would have been too good. We, when my husband and I, when we were dating and we moved in together, we had to merge our cat, clouders into one mega clouder. So we actually had five at that point ago. So it was nerve-wracking because you never know what a cat's gonna do. They're really beings of chaos.
Did they get along okay? Welcome to Cat Talk.
We're here now. Yes, they did, surprisingly. It was the best you could hope for. Like, a couple of them liked each other, and then the rest just avoided each other, and it was fine. Nobody got murdered.
Oh, well, that's always a great thing in any situation.
Yeah.
So, Honor, I would like to know, whereabouts did you grow up?
Yeah, so I was born in Queens, in Flushing. And then my parents moved us out to Long Island when I was about four. So that's where I grew up. I'm pretty familiar with the area, but close to the beach, south shore of Long Island. It was very nice, like suburban upbringing. And then came back to the city for college and have remained there. I'm very provincial. I didn't move around a lot.
And I'm a little disappointed that you say you grew up in Long Island, but you didn't say Long Island.
I know. You got to fight it. If I've spent time with my parents, it comes out. It's hard to fight it.
Oh, no.
It's worse. Yeah, now I'm thinking about it. They have some serious... The Queens and Long Island accents are almost the same now. They've kind of blended because so many people have moved out to from the boroughs out east. But theirs are pretty perfect. Like, they're not... They don't have the same... timber voices, Fran Drescher, but that's the accent. It's beautiful. I love it.
Well, it's such a definitive regional dialect, and I don't know. I kind of am more favorable towards that than the regular gruff New York one. That I imagine cabbies leaning out of their windows and shouting in that one.
Yeah. Well, my uncle was a cabbie, and he had a pretty gruff voice. So. It's real. I think that's more the kind of stereotypical Bronx, Brooklyn's a little harder. Yeah, but I mean, my grandpa was from, Brooklyn and Queens, and he used to say Tarlet and Earl.
Oh, wow.
He had the real one.
So you're in New York, which is, I would say it's one of the destination points for any comics fan.
Yeah.
Just because of how entrenched it is in Marvel history. Did you find yourself drawn to Marvel comics or comics in general because of that?
I think maybe the other way around a little bit. As I started reading them, it was Gotham is New York. How cool. I'm from the land of Peter Parker. That's fun. So it was more kind of a recognition thing. Once I got, cause I started reading them pretty young. My dad's a huge comic book guy and has a floor to ceiling shelving unit of hundreds and hundreds of them. And he always, you know, he was a stay-at-home dad when I was a kid, so it was very much, you know, we hung out and he would like read to me and then, you know, kind of work with me to like, all right, you're almost at chapter books, but not quite, so we're going to put you on comic books now. So that was kind of like my bridge between kids' books and The Hobbit, which is like the first novel I read. So like a lot of early X-Men stuff and some Spider-Man, and it was more like, okay, this is so cool. I live in, you know, Metropolis Gotham. Like all of everything is New York, which is a very New Yorker thing to say. We're very snotty.
No, really? New Yorkers?
It's the center of the universe, yeah.
And what other types of stuff were you into as a kid?
Reading-wise?
Just
like life-wise.
The whole shebang.
Yeah, I mean, I was a big reader. I loved reading. A real apocryphal story from my childhood is when I did something bad when I was like six, and I they were like, all right, go to your room, sit in your bed, no books, like just like sit and like you're in timeout. And my mom came up and she looks in and I was reading the tag on my pillow. Like, you know, I was just sitting there like spitefully reading it, like you said, no books, but
I'll show you.
Yeah. So like I would read anything that was nearby. That was a big thing. I was also really into bugs.
Okay.
So we had a backyard and I would just go out and like you know those fuzzy bumblebees?
Yeah.
That they don't really hurt anybody. I would go out and they were fluffy. So I would just sit there with my little finger out and pet them.
Oh my gosh.
Used to come in with like slugs up my arms that my mom would be like, get out. So yeah, really, I really always liked, you know, animals kind of poking around at stuff outside. Those were the big ones. I mean, my parents are big movie TV people. So we, you know, watched a ton of that. They, I think, didn't really believe in putting limits on what I watched past a certain point, like past a reasonable point. They weren't going to show me like, you know, real gore when I was five, but they were, you know, pretty like, all right, you're mature enough to watch, say like Braveheart now. Okay, well, here you go. So that was cool. I was able to kind of get a good sense of media, as it were, in the 90s.
That's pretty, like a pretty good media intake at that point.
So you got
good movies, good books, good TV. And what music were you listening to as a child?
When I was like little. So my mom's funny. She does not listen to music. Like she's like, no. Like, and she also like can't hum. Like she's like a musical. She with one exception, she loves swing and like she has one CD. She listens to the Stray Cats and that's it.
That's amazing.
That's it. Which is fantastic. And I respect it. My dad, like when we would go on like a car trip to visit family and stuff, we would listen to a lot of Garth Brooks. So it's, and Lone Star. Who else? Oh my God, what's her name? Another country artist, Alison Krauss. Yeah. And then also like Pink Floyd, like classic rock stuff. Meatloaf, loved Meatloaf.
That's such a cool juxtaposition of different genres.
It's weird because too, like now an album, like a Lone Star song will come on and it's like, how do I know every word to this ridiculous song? Like, seared into my brain.
And how did all this start to culminate in your creativity?
I think that if you are a kid and you're left enough to your own devices, kids are inherently creative. Like they put stuff together, they try things. And if you're able to sort of be in a soup of a lot of stuff, you're in a very like, I had a professor in college who, cause I went to school for journalism and he would always say like, your job is to be basically a recording device. Like you're not supposed to like put your, you know, views on things like record. And kind of backfilling over my childhood, I think like as a kid, I was very much recording everything and like absorbing a lot of stuff. So then by the time I got to high school and college, it was sort of, I was able to start smelting things together. And people in my family are also like big storytellers. Like we all, like everyone has their kind of repertoire. So it's like, I think it was a mode I was always really familiar with and like, yeah, this is the stuff I do all day and watch and read. So I'm going to, surely I, this is what everyone does and I'm doing it too. Why not? Not realizing like, that's not a good career choice.
And what were your first, like, or what were your favorite things that you dabbled on back then, or even while you're growing up in your formative years?
Yeah, I actually, when I was younger, I used to do a lot more visual art. So I would paint and draw a lot more. You know, I definitely believe that most creative pursuits are down to craft and work, but I definitely didn't have the same inclination or like spark of talent that I did for writing for visual art. Like I just was not on the same level. So it's like, okay, this will be a path of far more suffering for me. than trying to write. So yeah, I used to paint a lot. I used to draw a lot. And then I started writing, I think really, I always would write little stories and things down, but I think the first kind of short stories I can think of were coherent in a sense, were in a high school class that I took, world lit class in junior year with a fantastic teacher. And she would be like, all right, we're going to read Dante's Inferno. And now you're going to write a version of it. It's like, all right, sure.
Dude, that's awesome.
Tilted some windmills. It was fun, yeah.
And what kind of, did you have like OCs as a kid?
That's a good question. I'm sure my mom has all of this stuff in a scrapbook somewhere. And I am now curious to like go back and look. I'm trying to remember the kinds of, I went through like a heavy duty poetry phase high school and college, like where that's like most of what I would write. And then I was writing like more literary stuff for a long time. So I think like if I had OCs, they were like, they weren't interesting. Like most, you know, when you're writing in high school, it's like you're trying to kind of ape the things you're reading and like you haven't had experiences yet. Like, I don't know what the fuck talking about.
Tiffany, you don't know what true love is. You're only 15.
Exactly. And I don't know what hell is like. I just read this one story. So none are coming to mind, probably because they're all very bland.
Yeah. Well, you know, you got to get those reps in though.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
And where along the line did you come to that realization that like artistically you plateaued and you're like, I should probably focus more intently on writing?
I think it was an AP art class I took in college. In high school.
I was going to say that's a...
The dream had been left behind in college. Yeah, no. AP art class in high school that I was taking with some really talented friends who, you know, and, you know, sometimes you just look around and you're like, nope, that ain't good. Yeah, and it was really a kind of a self-awareness thing, I think, I think a lot of people who have gone on to be really good and have concentrated really hard, like I look at this stuff sometimes on YouTube of like 14-year-olds who are like, this was my art 2 years ago and this is me now, and it's like freaking like Michelangelo level renderings in Procreate. Just like, fuck you. But
yeah, exactly.
The thing 2 years earlier was like pretty, you know, like sketchy. And
well, what the hell do they have to stress about where that would take them away from their art?
I don't know. They're 14.
That's at least that's how I try to comfort myself. When they're like, oh, you know, I just whipped, this is my warm up sketch. Like, you little idiot. You haven't paid a bill in your life.
You had 12 hours today. Yeah. But they're growing so fast at that point. Like, your brain's just really rocking and rolling. So, yeah. Yeah.
And whenabouts did you start gravitating back towards comic stuff?
Yeah, so I read them pretty consistently throughout my life, but I didn't start actually buying them for myself until I was in college and I had a job and I could afford to buy them myself. So there was this great comic shop on think it was on Lexington. It's gone now, on like Lexington, right across, from Gramercy. That it was one of those really weird ones. It was up on the second. All of them in New York City, besides Forbidden Planet, basically, or like the ones out in Brooklyn, are like they're on like the third floor of a building with this weird little sign, and you have to like,
You know, wild.
Even Midtown Comics, like they're all like up some rickety stairs. It's
really
part of the charm. Yeah. Yeah, like the big Midtown in Midtown, you have to like look for the sign and then go up these like weird wooden stairs, and it's a whole thing. So it was kind of one of those, and it was great. It was just a big room of short boxes, and like things weren't really labeled that well. And it was digging was the fun. Like I love places like that. So at that point, I bought like Fables, like start to finish. I picked up all the up Watchmen and V for Vendetta and all like the classes Swamp Thing. And then I started just kind of picking up what was interesting to me of single issues. So like I really loved the Green Lantern arc, like Brightest Day, Blackest Night, I think it was. And you know, just kind of like dabbling in things I found interesting. But what I would do was like collect trade paperbacks for series that were pretty much finished, because I knew what was, you know, out there for me, and that I could like, okay, Fables is basically done, I can get every single one of these, which I like because I'm a completionist. So yeah, that was kind of my where I had autonomy to like pick what I wanted to read instead of like going shopping on the bookshelf at home.
Did you find that like pretty liberating? Like, although you say your dad did have good taste in comics, but now it's just like, boom, the world is your oyster.
Oh yeah, definitely. And like, right, I could pick up what I wanted. Nobody was judging me. Like, I didn't have to, you know, I didn't have to write a book report. No, I didn't make me do that. But yeah, it was, and they were mine. You know, it's like these are my books now. It's pretty cool. Yeah, and it's just fun to. Comic book stores are fun.
Oh my gosh, yeah. That's
no preach to the choir, but
well, it's ever since the pandemic, like I personally try to spend like maybe under an hour, but I miss, you know, just going through every goddamn dollar box.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Because you don't know what's in there. Maybe somebody really messed up.
That's the best. Bring something clearly labeled a dollar to the front. Like, I'm sorry, this is a tag.
Yeah.
And when, okay, so we've got you just spreading your wings, you are buying what you want to buy, you are writing focused. What was the first comic project of your own that you recollect working on?
So it was Andraste A, which is the series that is, I've still, it's kind of on pause right now. But I started working on that. So this has been a theme for me with my comic projects, is I also write a lot of prose, and I still like write in different forms. But oftentimes I will get to a point with a story where it's like, all right, I can't, like, this isn't a story. Just like, I'm not a visual artist. Like, this isn't a short story. It's a comic. It's gotta be. And that's what happened there. So that story came from reading about Boudica after I had studied abroad and seen her statue. And, you know, it's this hugely epic war story with kind of Celtic mythology and Roman mythology behind it. And it's just a wonderful story. And it's been done, you know, but it hasn't been done to death. It's not like, you know, Caesar or, you know, the American Revolution, where it's like, all right, we have 700 movies about this. It felt like, all right, you know, this is kind of an opportunity maybe to really learn about this person and talk about her. So that was the first one I started working on. One of my friends from that high school AP art class, she was kind of getting into comics at that point. So we started developing a little bit together. And then she decided she wasn't able to keep working on it, you know, in the long term, because it's a huge project. So at that point I found on Facebook a wonderful group of people. It's called Connecting Comic Writers and Artists. And I found Unai, who is the main artist on the series, and that was it. Basically, I started working on that, and we actually started producing those issues in, I think it was 2019.
In the before times.
Yeah, really great timing.
So when you are writing, does Well, first off, do you listen to music or stone cold silence like a psychopath?
Like my mother? only Stray Cats. Just Zoot Suit Riot over and over again. No, I...
Ryan Setzer, fill me up.
It does depend on what phase I'm in. All of my favorite things that I've written actually have come from, I always listen to music when I'm running or I'm walking, and usually what I'll do is imagine, what I used to do as a teenager, I don't know if you did this too, it's like you imagine music videos for things and...
Oh yeah.
It's great.
It's the trailer for the book.
Right, right. So Andraste came from a Florence and the Machine song that is fantastic. And I just kept listening to when I was running and thinking of, you know, and it I think your brain sometimes needs time to like sit with information because that Boudica stuff was already in there. And I knew that I loved her. And then the song kind of like knit everything together. And New Red City was sort of a similar thing of, I was listening to a song by Lord Huron when I was out running, and like it, like was this.
Wait, running to Lord Huron?
Yeah. You think listening into Stone Cold Silence is a psychopathic thing to do?
No, you know what? I think working out Sad Bastard music is just the best way to go.
Yeah, yeah. I lived in Brooklyn for a while. You have to do things like that, where they kick you out. Yeah. So I. That music is definitely usually like kind of part of the fertile ground that things come out of. And then when I'm actually writing something, I will often have just like classical music going in the background. I really like Dvorak, and just like there are, you know, fun YouTube playlists that it's so embarrassing. I didn't know what this meant. So there are like these YouTube playlists that's like dark academia playlist or like light academia playlist. And I was like, I don't know what this means, but it's great classical music. And then I figured out there's this whole, I'm 1,000 years old too. There's this like whole sort of Tumblr-ish subculture of like these different aesthetics that people have built out. There's a whole Wikipedia wiki for these aesthetics. It's amazing. So like there's this sort of cottage industry of people who make these fantastic playlists themed to these aesthetics. And they have their little Ko-fi things and they like write up, you know, all the timestamps, and there's like a million comments on these videos. It's like, this helped me pass my test. It's really sweet.
So you're telling me there's a world outside of Lo-fi Beats, the playlist?
It's a wide world. Yes.
Oh my yes. gosh. I was today years old as well. How about that?
I know. And we're going to roll in and all the kids are just like, God damn it. It's not cool anymore. They found us. Yeah.
And the thing I was going to ask is there a difference in your preparation when you're writing prose to when you're writing comics?
I think I am much more of a planner when I'm writing comics.
Okay.
And there's like, what is it? It's like this dichotomy that people sometimes talk about of like, are you a pantser or like a plan? It's not planner, but I think that might, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it's like, do you write kind of by, like you fly by the seat of your pants and just write as it comes, or do you really plan? And I definitely with prose, I'll get an idea and it just sort of flows. And I then, you know, put it to the side and come back and work on it. With comics, I've found that as long as I have the seed of that idea and I can kind of write a rough outline for it, that's as far as I want to get by just pantsing and like right. free, you know, writing. Because then it's, you know, you look up and you have like 6 pages with 8 panels on them. And, you know, it's just like, oh, God damn it. I can't do this. Damn it. Damn it. So I definitely have to plan comics a little bit more. And I found that it just makes everything smoother.
And is it same music from prose and comics?
Yeah, I think I am like less apt to listen to music when I'm writing comics, actually, which is interesting. Yeah, I never actually thought about that before. And maybe it's because I'm focusing more on what I'm, it's more like I'm constructing, you know, I'm trying to do things, 2 things at once already. Like I'm trying to picture the page and also render it in writing. So it's just a third thing would be too much. Nope.
Hello there. My name is Don Cardenas, and I'm here to invite you to check out my podcast, the 2021 Granty Award-winning Comics Coffee Medal, where I interview creatives in, around, and about the worlds of, you guessed it, comics, coffee, and metal. I've already had such amazing guests on my show, including, but not limited to, Liana Kangas, Mike Norton, John O'Diener, Michael Conrad, Sophie Campbell, Guitar Max Carlisle, Andrew Baina, and of course, the Word Bros themselves, Bob and Kevin. Comics Coffee Metal is available on all the major podcast services, and you can find it directly at comicscoffeemetal.com. I hope to see you there, and now I return you to Into the Comics Cave with the amazing, awesome, talented, tall, handsome, what else did I say? Definitely over 6 feet tall, smells good like lavender and motorcycle grease. Is that right? Motorcycle grease? All right. Grant Stoy. There, I said it. Get my money now.
So, Amir, I have a question. Just to preface, everything is the exact same as it is now.
Okay.
However, you find out that every night your cats actually have a foot-long, thin, prehensile tongue. And they stick it into your head and they taste your dreams.
Okay.
And then when they're done tasting your dreams, they talk about it. But you don't hear them. Except one night you find this out. A, is that fucked up? And B, how do you live your life from that point on?
I mean, A, you should write that comic because that would be great. And I think it would be a fantastic one shot. I love it. B, I don't think it would bother me that much because I assume that would be kind of normal. Like everything's, you know, the same. Like, how would we, is it just my cats? I guess is my question. Like, are my cats the only cats in the world that do this? Otherwise, surely we'd be aware that cats do this.
What if it's not? Like, what is this something you would pursue? Like, do you tell anyone, hey, you won't believe this?
I would tell people. I'd be taking videos. Oh my God. Yeah. I mean, I'm a really heavy sleeper, so it's possible I would never, they could be doing it right now.
This is actually a simulation.
Yeah, they're testing me. They're watching. Yes, I think that is pretty fucked up. Anything putting its tongue in your ear is just like not something viscerally really gross about it. But also, cats can like both taste dreams and talk, I think. Like, the world might be a better place. I don't know.
Well, we don't even... What do you imagine their voices sound like? I have my answer, and I want to hear yours.
Oh, my God. I do their voices a lot for just when I'm talking to them around the house. I don't know if I'm ready to debut them to the world. They all do have different voices.
Honor, we only have 6 listeners.
I know. I know, but they'll be horrified. They'll never come back. So they all, you know, cats all have like different meow voices too. So like, yeah. Wren sounds like a klaxon. Like she has the most, just like, meh. So I think she would actually probably sound like Fran Drescher to what, you know, we were talking about earlier. I mm-hmm. think that would be like her voice because she's very loud and kind of has the like, meh. Peanut would sound like a Disney princess. She has this very like, sweet kind of melodious like yeah. And I think Cheese, he's just like a big lunk. Like he's like a big nice lunk. So I imagine he would sound like John Cena.
Really?
Yeah. That's what I think of, like nice large man, you know?
In my head, in my dumb brain, I think of the late Lorenzo Music, who did the voice of Garfield and Friends and Gummy. Like he's my big dumb lunk voice.
That would work too. That would work too, for sure.
Unfortunately, I think the cats would have just these wet, deep, gross voices. Like really unsettling.
You won't believe it.
They gotta talk around the horrible tongue, so you're right, they might just be like, he was dreaming about coffee cake again. Like just horrible in the bag of the
lot of, and it's all, and like, they're having to like
Yeah.
Because, you know, brain
somebody juice. Just shut off the podcast.
Just they'll be back. We have a nice... great. Our six listeners are just top of the pops. So we have reached a point where I'm going to ask you five questions that we ask every guest. They're based of Jim Lipton, as though we're best friends, me and Jimmy Lips, inside the Actors Studio. Are you familiar with the show?
I am. I actually have a fun family story that I hope doesn't get me in trouble if your six listeners say something. My mom sincerely believes, as does my aunt, that Jimmy Lips stole Inside the Actors Studio from her cousin, Richard Brown, who has been running a movies 101 class at NYU since 1970. And he has like actors and directors come on and talk, like he's had huge people on. And now it's like, he'll have, you know, like, I think his first class, he had like Mel Brooks, because Mel Brooks was like his neighbor. And he was like, hey, we don't have anybody to talk to the class. You want to come in? And it sort of went from there. But yeah, now he does it. Well, he did pre-pandemic do them in like a big auditorium. They're really cool. But it's he's a really good interviewer. And it's like, and I'm not just saying that because he's my mom's cousin. I barely know him. He's a very nice man. But it's the same kind of format where he, you know, will have really interesting conversations with people, and then like he shows the movie that they're talking about. But he's been doing it since 1970, and Inside the Actors Studio started in 1994. So just saying.
Well, not curious as to when. I like how this became a James Lipton retrospective. First it was Cat Talk, now it's James Lipton. Because I know the Inside the Actors Studio was formulated from the classes that he taught at that place.
Yeah. And I forget what school he was at, but he was in this, I think he was maybe at Columbia, because I think he was in the city. But yeah.
But yeah, I don't think he was teaching it in the 70s.
No. Yeah. It was much earlier.
Well, in your dead face, Jimmy Lips, yeah. You lose. So!
Richard Brown's still here.
Who's the winner now?
Yeah.
Back to normalcy a little.
Sorry.
Bit. No. It's great. We always talk about James Lipton in such adversarial tones. Number one, what is your favorite sequential arts sound effect?
Oh, I think it's gotta be foom, like FOOM, like something goes really fast. Foom. Mm-hmm. That's my favorite.
Now, if you were a letter and or artist, how would you have it depicted on in your comic?
Yeah, I think probably following the line of whatever was moving across the panel and getting smaller with it towards the horizon line, but kind of a, you know, pinch at the end. Maybe speed lines, I guess, you know, you could do that if you wanted to, or probably just like following the line of the movement.
It's just FOOM or infinite O's as
to... Oh, yeah, yeah.
All right.
Or like the sound of something like getting sucked down a pneumatic tube, I think it could be used for it too, like that, like
yeah. Phew.
Yeah.
That's a good sound.
I like that sound.
And number two, what is something that you love about sequential art?
I think there are a lot of things that comics and poetry have in common. And the thing that I love about both of them is that they are for the reader much closer in my mind to having the actual experience that's being depicted than anything else. So like in a movie, you're sort of like a prisoner to the speed that the director wants you to see things at. And that's why like action scenes are totally inscrutable nowadays. Like you're seeing through somebody else's eyes in a way. Mm-hmm. And if you're looking at a comic, like it's a visual medium, you're also seeing what the artist is depicting, but you can spend as much time with each panel as you want to, and you know, if it's an artist who works in a really detailed way, like that's one joy. If it's a really spare kind of artwork style, then that's, you know, another joy is like the pacing of how you're going through the work. And I think that is different for everybody, which is really cool. And where that overlaps with poetry is, you know, poetry is a very image heavy medium. If you like read a poem, that's usually what gets pulled out to depict. It's like, if you're writing a poem about being at the beach, it's not a narrative of like, and then I walked down the sand in front of my towel. It's like, you're getting the something that's as close to the actual sensations of what the person experiences possible. And I think comics are like one level of abstraction up from poetry. And I really like the reading experience of both of those things. And I think it's really cool too that you, you know, in a comic book, you have that, you're giving the reader like more agency maybe than you do with a novel, or a lot of other types of media.
Yeah, right on. And the flip side of this, unfortunately, is three. What is something you dislike about sequential art?
Nothing. No.
No notes. Love it.
I think there are definitely like things that the industry could do a better job of, for sure. Like, it's hard. It's hard to get into. I think a lot of people feel exploited because of the expense of making books. It's really, you know, and I pay all the artists that I work with. So for me, it's like a big undertaking. Mm-hmm. And to me, it's like more than worth it. But I know that counts a lot of people out who have fantastic books in them, and it that sucks. And I think, you know, that can kind of be said. That's art nowadays. Like,
unfortunately,
a lot of people have a wonderful novel in them, and they're working, you know, 60 hours a week. And that, you know, that is sort of the state of things. There isn't enough arts funding in this country. So, like, I think that's where probably most of my criticisms are. I think, too, it's an old industry that is, I think, where, you know, some parts of it are trying to modernize, some parts of it are, and it's been hard for everybody. I think computers, really, the internet really threw a curveball in there for human civilization. But I think especially, like, I'm thinking right now of the whole Comixology debacle, which,
oh,
like,
gosh,
man, I miss that guided view. And it's so hard because that was a great, like, product. That was a great way to read comics, and now it's gone. And it feels like, you know, they're so, as a medium, they're I think often discounted as, like, trash is not the right word, but just like sub, like less than novels, yeah, less than film. And that's not the case at all. We know that, but, you know, that's why I think Comixology kind of got the shaft, and it wasn't like respected as a product that was worth maintaining in its, you know, state, because whoever was, you know, moved off of the project definitely cared about it, but then it was moved in and it was messy. And I definitely, like, can empathize with the developers who were fielding all that things. Like, it's not their fault, but I wish there was, like, just a really good comic reader that somebody would, like, come on, somebody, build it.
Please.
Please.
And moving on from the depression pit.
Yeah.
Number four, what is your favorite swear word that's not actually a swear word?
You know, swearing is a national sport where I come from. so this is a very disrespectful question. No. I love the word gormless. Just because it's like a punch, you know, gormless. Like, it's, and nobody really knows what it means, which, unless you're in England, because it's a very British-y word. But mm-hmm. if you say it to somebody here, they're like, I know that was derogatory, but I don't know why. And it proves that they're gormless.
And it's using it as a not swear and pairing it with a swear. Like, it's a good one, like a gormless fuck.
Yeah.
It's really one, two, right in the kisser.
Yep. Yeah, stacking curse words is great. My dad is very good at that. like, he just, especially when he's driving, it's just like, boop, boop. It's good.
Have you ever taken, like, a recorder just to use some of these things in your pieces?
I should do that one day. I should just, like, carry one around. That's one thing I love doing. This is actually something I used to do more, especially before the pandemic, because I would do a lot of my writing on trains, because I don't know why. I think it was sort of a forcing function of, like, can't look at my phone, can't get distracted. Like, I just have my notebook and I'm underground. But you hear things all the time, and I definitely, like, I think if you're in New York City and there's that constant, or any city, you know, there's sort of a constant murmur around you, that you kind of develop an ear for things like that.
Yeah.
So yeah, I definitely, my parents, you know, cadences certainly slip into dialogue sometimes, and it's fun. They're just people I hear. But yeah, I should really just make one of those like old school soundboard things of just like,
oh my gosh,
his greatest hits.
I love these tangents so far. The Arnold Schwarzenegger or the Samuel L. Jackson soundboards.
I don't think I ever saw the Schwarzenegger one. I definitely remember the Samuel L. Jackson one. That one was great.
With the Schwarzenegger, it's just it.
Would it be like three things?
Yeah. It's just, who is your daddy? And what did he do? And they're like, it's not a tumor. We just rotate between those, and the prank calls were very short, but very good.
Oh my god. I love that his accent is basically the same as the actress who played Anna Delvey on that Netflix show now. Like, you know, if you're trying to do her accent, is it Schwarzenegger? Is it her? I don't know. It's pretty great.
It's a toss-up.
Yeah, it's a toss-up.
Well, I have some bad news for you. You were recently elected mayor of Long Island.
Oh, shit.
And during your coronation ceremony, because I'm assuming that's what they do there, correct?
They do. It's a giant bagel. it is flown in by a seagull,
mm-hmm.
who then eats it on your head. That's what we do.
And everyone's wearing New York Islanders jerseys.
Yes. Yep.
But unfortunately, right as you're about to ascend to the mayoral
minivan, yeah.
Yes. a would-be usurper has planted bombs all around it, and as soon as your tuchus hits the cushion,
uh-huh.
boom, that's all she wrote. However, you are taken to what we suppose is heaven, and while you're there, you look over and you see this tiny, brow-beaten, cranky man at a drafting board just furiously scribbling thousands of little circles, and it's actually Jacob Kurtzberg, aka Jack Kirby,
uh-huh.
the King of American Comics.
Yep.
What do you think he says to you, or what do you hope he says to you?
I mean, I would hope he was drawing a picture of my failed explosive coronation, and then he would turn around and be like, look at this shit.
Free charge.
Isn't this ridiculous? Yeah. Sucker.
Because he's a New Yorker born and bred, like till the day he died.
Yep. Yep. New Yorker, New York Jew, just like me. It's we're really the same person, I think. No.
So you get there and you're like, I'm looking in a mirror. This is incredible heaven.
Oh, right. Right. He'd be like, thank God you're here. No. I think he would make fun of me brutally for my seagull bagel minivan explosion thing. It's not even a good way to go.
I like to think that's what he would say. That wasn't even a good way.
That wasn't even a good way to go. That's what he'd say. Yeah.
Well, Utter, thank you so much for joining me. Where can folks find you on them socials?
Yeah, so I am at R Honor V on most things, rhonorv.com, and at R Honor V on Twitter and Instagram. And my comic that's kickstarting right now is New Rat City, about New York. So if you like hearing me talk about that, you can go check that out. That's at newratcitycomic.com. And then there's also Andraste Day at andrastecomic.com.
Hooray! Well, thank you again for joining us. This is a lot of fun.
Thank you. Yeah, agreed.
This has been a Comic Book Yeti production. You can find new episodes on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and anywhere podcasts stream. For more information on the Comic Book Yeti, please visit comicbookyeti.com. And for more of Grant, visit grantstoy.com or on Twitter @grantandstuff.